My benevolent friend did not let me finish, and continued, "On Earth, our unhappy brothers and sisters struggle for economic dominance, for undisciplined passions, and for the hegemony of erroneous principles. The exact same thing applies in the zones close to the earthly mind. Among the wicked and ignorant spirits, there are cooperatives for evil, economic systems of a feudalist nature, the base exploitation of certain forces of nature, tyrannical vanity, the diffusion of lies, the slavery of those who weaken themselves through negligence, the cruel captivity of failed and careless spirits, passions perhaps more undisciplined than those on earth, sentimental unrest, terrible imbalances of the mind, and anguished aberrations of the sentiments. Everywhere, my friend, spiritual failure is always the same to the Lord, although it varies in intensity and hue. But what about the weapons?" I asked. "Are they ever used?" "Why not?" Alfredo promptly replied. "We don't use lead bullets, we use electric projectiles. Of course, we never attack anyone. Our task is rescue and not extermination." "Nevertheless," I said, deeply impressed, "what is the effect of such projectiles?" "They are terribly frightening," he replied, smiling, "and above all, they demonstrate the abilities of a defense that surpasses the offense." "But they only frighten?" "They can cause the impression of death." "What do you mean?" I exclaimed with unbridled fear. Alfredo thought for a few seconds, and perhaps pondering the seriousness of his explanation, he replied calmly, My friend, since we are no longer in the flesh, let's try to discarnate our thoughts also. Individuals here who cling to physical impressions cause their perispirits to become denser, just as spirits dedicated to the higher realms purify and elevate theirs. Our projectiles, therefore, repel the enemies of the good by sending out dreadful vibrations, and they can cause the illusion of death by acting on the dense bodies of our less advanced fellow beings. On the earth, isn't physical death also purely an impression? No one ceases to be. The phenomenon is merely one of invisibility or sometimes of absence. As for the responsibility of those who kill, that is something else. And beyond this observation, which belongs to the jurisdiction of divine justice, we must also consider the fact that, in this sphere, a modified perispirit can reappear every day via the mental matter used to produce it, whereas there are souls that sometimes work for centuries to obtain a new physical body. Vicente and I kept quiet, stupefied. Alfredo smiled serenely and asked good-humoredly, "Do you two know the Hindu legend about the serpent and the saint?" Before we could say no, he continued. "The popular traditions of India say that once upon a time there was a poisonous serpent in a certain field. No one dared pass by there, fearing it would strike them. But one holy man in God's service intentionally went there, trusting more in God than in himself. The serpent struck at him defiantly. He overcame it, however, with a serene look and said, 'My sister, the law says that we are not to harm anyone.' The viper withdrew, ashamed. The wise man continued on his way and the serpent changed completely. It sought out places inhabited by people, desiring to make up for its old crimes. Its behavior was completely peaceful, but from that time on, people began to abuse it. When they saw that it was completely submissive, men, women and children threw stones at it. The unhappy creature withdrew into its den, dejected. It felt afflicted, fearful, depressed. It was then, however, that the saint returned by the same way and decided to visit the serpent. He was amazed to see the kind of shape it was in. There, serpent then told him its bitter tale. It wanted to be good, affable and loving, but people persecuted and stoned it. The wise man thought and thought and then answered, 'But my sister, you have been mistaken. I advised you not to bite anyone, not to chase and kill anyone, but I did not tell you to stop frightening bad people. Don't attack the children of God, our brothers and sisters on the same pathway of life, but do defend your part in the work of the Lord. Neither bite nor harm, but keep the wicked ones away, hiss and show them your fangs.'" Aniceto smiled. Alfredo took a long pause and concluded, I don't think the fable needs any comment. Demented spirits. A large number of workers accompanied us in our endeavor. Scores of individuals were loading large jugs of water, cauldrons of soup, and vials of medicinal substances onto several carts. Going a bit further, I saw that hundreds of spirits were housed together in vast lodgings. With their wandering eyes and sullen faces, they looked like a congregation of lunatics in a huge asylum. Alfredo issued a few orders to a large group of healing breath technicians, who then left us for buildings located in a different area. He kindly explained that benefactors from Campo de Paz had interned a large number of infirm spirits there, who were more mentally unbalanced than wicked per se. The patients we were looking at seemed to have improved somewhat. They were walking about and many of them were already conversing with each other, despite the mental imbalance they displayed in their words and thoughts. Alfredo was explaining the multiple duties of the work routine, when a small group of spirits respectfully gathered around us. Alfredo, sir, said an elderly man with a snow-white beard, I'm waiting for the results of my petition. How are things regarding my lands and slaves? I paid a goodly price to Carmo Garcia. You know that I have been worried about them for many years and I can't wait any longer. When can I go home? I believe you know how much I need to get back to my family. My wife and children are waiting for me. As an excellent doctor of the soul, Alfredo was paying close attention to the old man and responded as if he were dealing with a sane person. Yes, Malaquias, you are right to complain, but your health will not allow for a speedy return. You know that your wife, Doña Sina, asked that you receive the appropriate treatment here. I believe that she must have much peace of mind about you. Your thoughts, on the other hand, have yet to be put in order, my friend. We still have some more work to do. So why worry so much about your lands and slaves? First your health, Malaquias. Don't forget about your health. The old man smiled like a patient leaning on the strength and optimism of his doctor. I know that what you're saying is right, but my children don't do a thing without me. They're lazy and need me to be there. But subtly instructing the poor old man, Alfredo objected, but where did your children come from into your fatherly arms? Didn't they come from the hands of God? Yes, yes, agreed the old man, trembling and happy. Well, there you go, Malaquias. There are moments in life when we must turn over to God what belongs to Him. Also, your children are responsible for themselves, and if they are idle, they will have to answer for the ills they have created around them. For now, it is vital that you renew yourself, clarify your thoughts and calm your heart. The old man smiled and felt comforted, but before he could speak again, a gentleman of noble bearing stepped forward, exclaiming, "And the resolution of my case, Alfredo, sir? I'm afraid that I have been harmed by untrustworthy relatives. My cousins covet my part of the inheritance from my grandparents. As I already pointed out to you, my cut is larger than theirs. But I heard that the Viscount of Cairo registered has used all of his influence against me. No one can deny that he is a big swindler. What can't he do with his political shenanigans? He has been wrongly informed about me. Have you sent my request to the Emperor? I have sent the message, explained Alfredo with brotherly affection, and the Emperor will certainly take your request into account. But it's been so long? The gentleman said impatiently, as if he were before a common subordinate. But my dear Aristarco, answered the administrator, very calmly, I believe you are being tested in order to learn about the grandeur of your divine inheritance. What is an earthly inheritance worth when compared with your never-ending heritage? Don't think about what you've lost, meditate on the sublime assets you will be able to attain in light of the eternal life. Forget about your ambitious cousins and the Viscount who doesn't seem to understand you. Everything they possess in the transitory realm will have to be left behind when they settle their accounts with the Divine One. Haven't you ever thought about that? Aristarco seemed to let loose of his anxiety for a few moments, and smiling openly he replied. That's true. Those scoundrels are going to die someday. A woman who seemed distressed approached and interrupted haughtily, Alfredo, sir, I would like for you not to keep me here any longer. My own husband is my family's enemy. He promised he would hound our daughters as soon as I was away from home. If I stay here, I'm sure he will squander our assets and corrupt our family name. Please authorize my return. My heart tells me that my daughters are in dire straits. One and more convinced that my disease is the result of this state of affairs. I know, my sister, replied our friend with the same thoughtfulness as before. But what good would it do to return when you are so deeply tormented? Wouldn't it be better to get healed and to ease your mind so that you can help your daughters more effectively? But I don't even know where I am, complained the poor woman, wringing her hands. I think they've brought me to the ends of the earth just to treat a simple fainting spell. Nevertheless, no one is mistreating you, said Alfredo kindly, and your case is not as simple as it seems. Pull yourself together. Blood ties are spiritually constructive, but above them lies the universal family. There are people bearing burdens much heavier than yours. Learn to the best of your ability to free yourself from fleeting possessions in order to gain imperishable assets. The unhappy woman did not smile like the others. Shutting herself off in her somber mood, she stomped off, eyes blazing with rage as though her mind had been driven far away, incapable of any comprehension. Other patients wanted to be heard, but Alfredo said in a loud voice, I cannot assist all of you right now. The day after tomorrow you will be received to have things explained to you. And turning to us he explained, in the physical realm, they would all be regarded as completely normal, but here they are true lunatics. They are discarnates who have been clinging to materialistic problems for a long time. They complain and want something done about their individual situations, but they fail to grasp the opportunity for illumination. In fact, they disdain it. They accuse others but don't even consider their own mistakes. I have attempted to listen to them to give them an idea of our work in the area of those who are mentally unbalanced because of their excessive focus on inferior purposes. It's not a crime if people are interested in what is occurring on their lands, or if they are concerned about having received an inheritance, or if they are concerned about the well-being of their family. However, deep down, the old man who complained about his lands and slaves never thought about anything other than acting like a tyrant in his fields. The gentleman who is waiting for his inheritance wanted to cheat his cousins, and the woman who seemed so interested in her home environment discarnated when she secretly intended to poison her husband. I know their ways, each one of them. They have awakened from a long sleep in unconsciousness and they think they are still incarnate. They also think they can conceal their criminal designs. I was aghast. Showing my deep astonishment, I asked, have these patients been here for very long? How did they arrive here at the aid station? Kindly as ever, Alfredo replied, they were brought here in the worst condition. They had been in a deep sleep for a long time and have been gradually recovering their memory until they can be sent to the magnetic institutions in Campo de Paz in order to receive better aid and much needed instruction. We continued along rows of sheltering groves en route to huge buildings displaying striking architectural lines. The light grew progressively dimmer. What was happening? Vicente and I looked worriedly at each other. Alfredo, Anicetto and the others, however, were walking along unruffled. Their serenity calmed me inside, in spite of my insufferable fear. We finally reached another group of pavilions that extended over an area of more than a mile and a half by my calculations. Once we were amongst them, however, the darkness became even worse. I was vaguely able to make out what they looked like, and from what I could tell, they were spacious infirmaries with solid roofs, but partially open at the top of their high walls, allowing for the free flow of air. Dozens of devoted and active workers followed us in complete silence. Alfredo was the only one to speak. I noticed that he was extremely discreet about what he said. 139. Everything gave me the impression of having entered a dark cemetery, where visitors were obliged to hold the utmost respect for the departed. Oddly enough, I noticed that one of the workers had given a small device to Alfredo. He showed it to us, explaining, "This is a luminous signaling device. These wards shelter brothers and sisters who are still asleep. At the moment, there are around 2,000 of them here." The numerous co-workers were moving in orderly fashion toward their assigned service areas. After a short pause, the administrator said firmly, "Let's begin the assistance work." At Alfredo's first luminous signal, several electric lights came on, and then, after having overcome my first impression of horror, I saw long rows of low beds, all of them occupied by individuals immersed in deep sleep. Many had an awful appearance. There were very few whose eyelids were closed in a look of peace. The extreme terror and dolorous desperation of death were stamped on the glazed eyes of nearly all of them. Their faces were covered with corpse-like paleness. I recalled ancient literature and thought of the old Egyptian tombs. Right there in front of us were hundreds of perfect mummies. Hardly any seemed to be sleeping naturally. Alfredo said to Anicito, "Unfortunately, we cannot assist all of them."
"Why not?"
our guide asked, concerned. "We are waiting for skilled personnel. I have the cooperation of 80 assistants at my disposal for this kind of service, but each one cannot attend to more than 5 patients at a time." With that in mind, of the 1,980 patients lodged here, I have separated the 400 most likely to wake up next in order to submit them to intensive treatment. 140. And the others? They receive nourishment and heavy medication once a day. Anicito was silent and pensive. Profoundly touched by the scene, I instinctively leaned toward the closest patient and tried to examine his physiological condition. I perceived body heat, a regular pulse and respiratory movement, although I noticed extreme rigidness in his limbs as if he were immersed in cataleptic immobility. I was overcome by an indescribable sensation. I stood up, frightened, turned to Anicito as discreetly as possible, and asked, "Explain this to me, for God's sake. What is this place? Some sort of house of death after death?" My instructor smiled complacently, and explained in a nearly imperceptible voice, "Yes, Andre, this sleep is truly an advanced picture of death. Under the blessing of this shelter, there are several thousand of our brothers and sisters who are still asleep. They are individuals who never surrendered to the active and renewing good around them, particularly those who were thoroughly convinced that death meant nothingness, the end of everything, eternal sleep. The belief in a higher life is an incessant activity of the soul. Rust attacks the unused hoe. Lethargy invades the spirit devoid of a creative ideal. The men and women that believe in eternal life even while they are still in the physical realm, and even though they may not be Christians per se, are developing faculties of spiritual movement. They can thus enter the extraterrestrial realms in an animate state, at least in terms of more or less precise locomotion and sense of judgment. However, individuals who persevere in deliberate and complete denial, despite sometimes being affiliated with outward forms of religious activity, are truly unfortunate, because in actuality they see nothing beyond their flesh, nor do they desire any spiritual knowledge whatsoever. Many enter our arenas of service like living embryos in the eternally divine womb of nature. A friend of ours calls them fetus spirits. However, in my opinion, they would be happy if they actually were in that beginning condition. We are certain that many have completely refused contact with faith out of criminal indifference toward the designs of the Eternal Father. They sleep because they have been magnetized by their own negativistic concepts. They remain paralyzed because they preferred narrow-mindedness to understanding. Nonetheless, the day will come when they must wake up and pay their debts. This is why I regard them as suffering spirits. First, they linger in the sleep they believed in, later on, they wake up. Most of them, however, cannot escape physical and mental illness, just as what happened to those demented brothers and sisters whom we saw a little while ago. I was astonished. Since Vicente had approached to listen in, Anicito explained to both of us, "Authentic faith is exercise for the spirit. Those who do not exercise their faith in some way on earth, deliberately preferring unwarranted denial, will find themselves unable to move later on. Such individuals need sleep, deep repose, until they wake up to the test of responsibilities that life brings. Noticing that our guide wanted to avoid a long commentary so that we could follow the assistant's work more closely, I stilled the many questions that were burning in my mind. With the exception of a small group of women who stayed with Ismailia, all the other workers remained in a state of watchfulness at the feet of the mummified groups. Artificial light illuminated the endless rows of beds, but I noticed that none of the patients were reacting to the intense brightness. They remained rigid, corpse-like, prostrate. I noticed that Alfredo had begun to work the signaling device in order to send out service orders. Each signal implied a different operation. I saw that the station workers were in a state of deep silence as they distributed small portions of liquid food and oral medication. Then they gave small amounts of energized water to the unfortunate patients, except for several who seemed ready to receive only broth and medicine. 2/3 of the 400 patients under treatment received magnetic passes. A few others received healing breath applications. All the work activity was transmitted via luminous signals coming from the hands of the administrator, who seemed interested in preserving the utmost silence. Impressed with what I saw, I asked our guide in a low voice why some of the patients had not benefited from the water and the help of new energies received through passes and the life-giving breath. Anisato leaned close to my ear with the tenderness of a father calming his anxious little child and said, "Everyone in life, my dear Andre, needs what is specific to them. Here we understand this law of nature to the fullest." Nightmares. While Alfredo continued directing the work, Anisato received his permission to lead us to some distant beds, on which lay a number of patients who had not been assisted with magnetic aid. "We need to stress practical experience and take advantage of opportunities when they appear," affirmed Anisato. We followed him curiously while observing the lonely, painful or awful expressions on their death masks. When we were quite some way from the central area, our instructor explained in a grave tone, "I too would like to determine how beneficial your experience was at the Magnetic Aid Chamber for Sense Enhancement. In order to help our incarnate friends effectively, we have to be able to see with clarity and precision." Pointing to the motionless patients, he added, "All those who sleep in these wards are sleeping very badly. But are there really in the spirit realms any who actually sleep well?" Vicente asked bluntly. 145. "Of course," replied Anisato thoughtfully. "In our arena of activity, there are those who enjoy short periods of rest. They are morally upstanding workers who await nightly repose with a peace of mind of those who work and rest with a clear conscience." He paused as though he were considering the best way to sum it up so as not to waste time, and then said, "But such spirits do not need to stay in the emergency facilities of an aid station as do the children of darkness." Then he returned to the moral of the lesson: "Those who sleep in turmoil are plagued by nightmares. All these unfortunate brothers and sisters around us here seem to be dead, but actually they are prisoners of horrible inner visions. Let's use this to your advantage and proceed with some quick observations. You both used to be concerned with anatomical research, the examination of the viscera and the scientific scrutiny of apparently dead cells. Now, you're concerned with the deep auscultation of the soul, the probing of the sentiments, and the examination of the mental realm." And with a decided expression, he concluded resolutely, "Let's get to work." He assigned me to the aged body of a woman. "Andre, examine this sister in detail. Don't dwell on her outward appearance. Study her with all the ability and insight at your disposal." I was so interested in heeding his instructions that I didn't even hear the ones he was giving to Vicente. I tried to forget the outer picture and focused on that female mask with all my mental abilities. As I became less and less concerned about other matters, I made out a dark gray shadow that had begun to form over her forehead. The sight seemed to help me concentrate. As I watched the phenomenon intensify, I was no longer aware of any outside object or situation. I was stupefied as I began to discern shapes starting to form within that small shadowy sphere. A modest house appeared in a humble town. I felt as if I were actually going through its door. A horrible and agonizing scene was occurring inside. An adult woman, displaying a look of insensitive cruelty on her face, was struggling with a drunken man. "Anna. Anna. For God's sake. Don't kill me," he was begging her, unable to defend himself. "Never. I'll never forgive you," yelled the woman, adding in a sinister tone, "You're going to die tonight." I saw the unfortunate man collapse, exhausted. "You poisoned my drink," he shouted in tears. "Forgive me if I have caused you any harm. I'm a father. Anna. My children need me alive. Have mercy. Don't kill me." She listened coldly and answered hard-heartedly, "You shall die even so. I've had the misfortune of loving you, you who belong to another woman. You wouldn't leave her for me, so I shall avenge myself." Writhing on the floor, the poor wretch replied, "God knows I'm sorry for my sinful past. I want to live for the good, Anna. Forgive me out of love for the Eternal Father. Who knows? Maybe I could help you like a brother. Help me so that I can help you. Don't kill me, don't." The woman, however, as if her malice had only gotten worse when she heard his virtuous words, picked up a heavy hammer and shouted, "There is no God. There is no God. You're about to die, you bastard." And she split his skull with a dull thud. The man died without a scream. Soon thereafter, I saw the criminal pushing the body in a hand cart across a deserted railroad track. I followed her movements with interest. The night was very dark, but I could see her stop beside the railway. She checked the surroundings, made sure no one was looking and deposited her cargo on the tracks. She arranged the body so that the head would be cut off when the train passed, and then she left hurriedly, pushing the small empty cart. I didn't wait for the train. I followed the woman, who seemed uneasy and pensive. 147. However, before she could return the cart to the large backyard, I saw her eyes widen as if she were crazy. She was surrounded by beings that looked like thugs in black clothing. Now it was she who had a strange drunken look of terror. She had overcome a poor, unwary man, but she was about to be overpowered by beings that were perhaps even more wicked than herself. "Help! Help!" she screamed in terror. The scene continued, with the miserable creature spewing out supplications in vain. I felt like a spectator who needed to do something to help. And thanks to divine goodness, felt nothing for the unfortunate woman but ardent compassion. At the first impulse of revulsion for the crime she had committed, I remembered the lessons I had received in Nosola, and I thought of how I would regard the matter if this criminal were some person dear to my own heart. If in the world Anna were by my side, a member of my family, wouldn't I want to help her? How could I judge her if I didn't know anything about her past? Had she received a childhood education? The blessing of a home, the security of untainted love? Who knows if she hadn't come from afar like an uncomprehending stone rolling around in the abyss of suffering? What ties might have united her to the victim, who was also deserving of fraternal mercy? How might this sorrowful drama have begun? I didn't know. I only saw the poor woman surrounded by aggressive shadows as she pleaded for help. I didn't know how to help her, but I remembered that Anna was my sister, a daughter of the same father, a sister who had become ill on the common path. Although I was unable to determine the cause, at least for now, I was searching within myself for some way to help her, when someone suddenly called to me. It was Anicito, who kindly exclaimed, "Come along, Andre. Vicente and you have been able to make the most of this experience. I'm satisfied. Your thoughts of fraternity and peace have helped this unhappy sister a lot. Be assured of it and keep seeking understanding so that you can successfully provide further help. From what you have seen firsthand, you now know that all those who sleep in torment here are living strange nightmares that they can't escape for even 1 minute. We don't need to make comments about any one episode of these lives that were lived in opposition to the divine will. All that is needed is to remember that debts, everywhere, follow their debtors. And with an expressive look, he added, let's return to the center. We need to take part in prayer. Ismelia's prayer. Within a few moments, we rejoined the rest of the group.